Yo yo, welcome back to I Make Music, the podcast where we explore the real reasons and roads for independent musicians. It's your host, DJ Warm Cookies, part street poet, part music historian, part radio rebel, coming at you from Philadelphia. And today we're diving into a topic that's near and dear to my vinyl loving heart: the power and relevance of college radio in an age dominated by streaming algorithms. Why should indie artists care about those scrappy little stations on the left of the dial? What makes a college DJ spinning your track at 2 a.m. more meaningful than 1,000 faceless Spotify streams? We're gonna find out. But I'm not flying solo on this journey. I've got a special guest co-piloting the airwaves with me. You'll give it up for my man Thinktim, artist, agitator, and the guy with the legendary closing rants. He'll be chiming in throughout. About 20% of the time, we timed it, then dropping one of his signature truth bombs at the end. What's up, Thinktim?
Hey, what's good? Warm cookies. Willamay, I'm hyped for this. College radio? Man, talk about a throwback and a revolution rolled in one. I cut my teeth on that staticky FM signal out of my own college back in the day, so I've got stories.
No doubt, we're going to cover a lot today. How college radio's unique programming and human touch sets it apart from the streamosphere. Some famous independent artists from the 90s to now who owe a big thanks to college stations for their break. Practical steps for you indie musicians on how to get your music onto those stations. Yes, we've got the inside scoop with music directors, Spinatron, NACC charts, even snail mail press kits, all that good stuff. And we're gonna talk money. Yeah, money as in what do you earn from a spin on college radio versus 10,000 streams on Spotify, and why sync licensing might just pay your rent when streaming can't. Plus, a bit of history. Back in the day, getting on the radio was the pinnacle of music exposure. We'll reminisce on that and see how college radio still holds weight for indie discovery today. And finally, we'll zoom out and look at how radio's culture has shifted from music to talk and podcasts, and what that means for artists who just want their music heard in 2025.
Sounds like a packed show, man. We better not waste a minute.
For real. So whether you're an artist frustrated by algorithmic playlists or a music fan who misses that authentic human touch, keep it locked. As always, we keep it conversational, wise, a little witty, and 100% real. All right, let's kick this off. The unique magic of college radio, especially in Philly. So let's set the stage. What makes college radio special? Why are we here preaching about FM stations? In the era of on-demand everything, well, imagine a place on the airwaves where the playlist isn't dictated by record label payola or a computer algorithm guessing your mood instead. It's curated by real human music fanatics, often students who are itching to share new sounds with a tight-knit community of listeners. That's college radio in a nutshell. It's the opposite of formulaic corporate radio. As one industry blog put it, college radio is one of the few outlets open to independent and self-released music, and a prime place to reach passionate listeners. These stations don't stick to top 40 hits. In fact, they pride themselves on digging deeper. Let's talk about our hometown heroes here in Philadelphia. We've got a killer college radio scene, each station with its own flavor. WXPN 88.5 FM. This is the University of Pennsylvania's station, though it's more than just a student club. XPN is actually run by professional staff and community volunteers, and it's a nationally recognized leader in triple A, programming adult album alternative, basically meaning they play a mix of rock, blues, roots, folk, and more. XPM calls itself the premier place for music discovery, and they ain't lying. They produce the famous World Cafe show on NPR, which has broken countless emerging artists. XPN's whole mission is connecting artists and audiences. They even host free weekly concerts. Free at noon, where rising stars play live in Philly. Fun fact, Lizzo, yes, that Lizzo, who became a superstar, did a free at noon performance in 2019, right at WXPN's venue, before she blew up globally. How's that for artist development? XPN's got this big annual festival, Xpentile Fest, and special programming, like the Blues Show, Sleepy Hollow, Mellow Weekend Mornings, and Stars End. Trippy late night ambient music that's been running since the 70s. They champion local Philly acts on their WXPN local shows, and basically act as a cultural institution, member supported by listeners who believe in curated radio. In short, WXPN is proof that a college-affiliated station can be a powerhouse for new music. They've established themselves as a prime source for music discovery. WKDU 91.7 FM, Drexel University's student-run gem. Now, if XPN is polished, WKDU is pure underground grit. And I say that with love. It's Philly's only free-format, non-commercial FM station. Free-format means DJs have near-total freedom to play what they want: punk at lunchtime, experimental jazz by dinner, maybe techno in the late hours. Schedules can get wild. Historically, WKDU's been bold. Since the 1970s, they've had a show called The Black Experience in Music, educating and celebrating black musical culture, and it's still running today, over 50 years later. When you tune in, you feel like part of a secret club. 1 hour, you might hear hardcore punk from a West Philly basement band. Next hour, it's a reggae showcase. Then a local rapper's mixtape. The range is huge, and because they're on FM, anyone in Philly can stumble on it and get their mind blown by something they'd never find on a commercial station. WHIP Radio, representing Temple University. WHIP, the call letters cheekily stand for We Have Infinite Potential, is actually an internet streaming station, not on FM dial, but they proudly call themselves Philly's number one college radio station. It's totally student-run and student-minded. You can catch it on apps like iHeartRadio. WHIP offers a variety of programming, music of various genres, talk shows, sports coverage, Temple Owls pride. It's a modern evolution, proving that even if you don't have a broadcast tower, you can build a radio community online. The students running WHIP are learning the ropes of broadcasting in a digital era, and they're keeping that open-minded college radio spirit alive. On the web stream, they'll play indie bands alongside campus news. One show might focus on underground hip-hop, the next on alternative rock. It's as diverse as the student body. The key is that it's student voice and human curation, not some corporate playlist. WRTI 90.1 FM, another Temple University outlet, but a totally different beast. WRTI is known for jazz and classical. That's right, while most of the FM dial gave up on classical music decades ago, WRTI devotes itself to it. By day, they do classical. By night, jazz. It's been around 75 years, and is a trailblazer in promoting jazz and classical on the air and in the community. So if you're an independent classical pianist or a jazz ensemble, college radio isn't just rock and punk. Stations like WRTI have your back, where commercial radio wouldn't give you the time of day. They have legendary local hosts. Bob Perkins, a Philly jazz radio icon, held down shows for years. WRTI shows how college linked stations can preserve art forms that mainstream radio ignores. It's listener supported too. I gotta shout them out because independent music isn't just indie rock. It can be an experimental orchestra composition or a young jazz quartet getting their first airplay. WRTI has an HD stream and online presence as well, reaching a global audience of jazz classical fans. See the pattern. Philly's college radio landscape alone covers more musical ground than most streaming algorithms ever will. From world music and blues on WXBN, to hardcore punk on WKDU, to underground hip-hop on WIP, to jazz sonatas on WRTI. It's all there, and it's programmed by people who live for the music. College radio DJs are often students or community volunteers who aren't doing it for money. They're doing it for love of music and sharing culture. That means they take risks on new artists. They'll throw on your demo or your Bandcamp track because they like it and think their audience should hear it. Not because some market research said it tested well.
Let me jump in on that, Warm Cookies. You hit something, risk-taking. Streaming platforms are great at giving you what you already know you like. That's their business model. Oh, you listen to Artist X? Here's more songs like that. It's comfortable, but it can keep you in a bubble. College radio smashes those bubbles. I remember tuning into my campus station back in the 90s. One minute I'm hearing a spoken word poetry track, next minute death metal, followed by a local folk singer's cassette. It was jarring in the best way. It forced you to open your ears. And as a listener, you also feel the human hand in it. Like, I'd hear the DJ's actual voice saying, "Yo, that last track was from a brand new band out of West Philly. Isn't that wild? If you liked it, they're playing at the TLA on Friday." You don't get that on Spotify. There's a relationship between the station and its audience. College radio audiences are typically smaller and localized, but they're tight communities. They interact, calling in requests, going to station-sponsored shows, maybe even walking into the studio if it's on campus. It's a two-way street that streaming just can't replicate, because streaming's not a community, it's a service.
Right. College radio listeners are often an active part of the station's culture. And since the DJs are peers or fellow music nerds, the audience trusts them. In a way you don't trust a faceless playlist. I mean, how many of you all have discovered your favorite band because an algorithm served it up? Possibly a few. But how many discovered something because a real person said on air, "I need you to hear this track. It changed my life." For me, those moments came from late-night college radio sessions. Let's throw some data or quotes in here. Just so you know, it's not only us romantics saying this. According to one analysis, college stations actively advocate for young and newly established artists, giving audiences an alternative to mainstream commercial channels and often leading to those artists' mainstream success. They literally spark musical trends that later blow up bigger. And here's a golden quote from none other than Chris Martin of Coldplay, a band you'd think was born mainstream. But nope, they hustled too. Coldplay's frontman said, "College radio is a very important medium that needs to survive. It is the future for broadcasting stars and pioneers of tomorrow." This was around when Coldplay was supporting College Radio Day. Yes, that exists. They credit college stations for helping break their first single Yellow in the US back in 2000. Imagine that, one of the biggest bands in the world tipping their hat to little college stations, playing their song for American students who'd never heard of them.
And Coldplay is not alone in that gratitude. A bunch of artists across genres have acknowledged how college radio gave them a leg up. To name drop a few, Joan Jett, R.E.M., Moby, Megadeth, All these folks have praised the support they got from college radio early on. REM, in fact, practically ruled the college radio charts in the 80s, long before mainstream radio caught on. They were kings of college rock.
Absolutely. REM's whole early career was built on college airplay, which is why that jangly alternative style was literally called college rock at the time. The Replacements, Sonic Youth, Pixies, none of those seminal indie bands were getting top 40 rotation, but they were dominating college stations and building cult followings in the process. College radio creates culture rather than just reflecting it. I want to highlight something else unique, the programming approach on college radio. Choosing the music is a key aspect. Stations deliberately avoid only commercial hits and lean into specific genres or niches that commercial radio ignores. That's why some college stations get a rep for, say, punk and indie, or new wave, or underground hip-hop. They become go-to spots for those scenes. And crucially, they love breaking new artists. Emerging acts and indie bands get airplay and promotion on college radio, precisely because they're new and different. Listeners tuning in know they're not going to just hear the same 10 songs on repeat. They're expecting to be surprised. As one article put it, these audiences expect to listen to something new, and not only mainstream artists. It's an open-minded listenership by design. You don't tune in to 91.7 FM expecting Taylor Swift. You tune in expecting the unknown. And that's exciting for an artist who is unknown. It means you have a real shot to catch someone's ear.
Yeah, and it's worth noting college radio isn't just a U.S. thing, but it's especially strong here. In some countries, college stations are smaller or not as common, but in North America, they're a big deal. Stations often have dozens or even hundreds of student volunteers behind the scenes, plus decent equipment. Some are better outfitted than local commercial stations. They might be tiny in audience size, but mighty in passion and sometimes resources. Take WXPN again. They have state-of-the-art studios and produce national content. That's all out of a college station or smaller campus stations. Maybe they broadcast only at 100 watts locally, but stream worldwide online and have a team of students learning audio engineering, production, promotions, etc. It's a whole ecosystem. And speaking of ecosystem, college radio fosters local scenes. Like Philly's scene benefits from these stations. WXPN and WKDU have both put out compilation albums of local bands, hosted gigs, DJed events in the city. It's really interwoven. If you're a Philly band and you get played on WXPN's The Key, their local music show, or WKDU's local segment, suddenly more people in town know your name. Those people show up to your gigs. It's analog virality, word of mouth via airwaves.
Reach, think Tim, the local angle is huge. Streaming services might connect you to listeners globally, in theory, but it's often impersonal. Someone in Sweden might hear your track on a random playlist and never even know who you are. But one spin on a city's college station can turn into a dedicated pocket of fans who feel proud that their station put you on. They'll claim you. This is our hometown hero. Or we heard them first on WXPN, WKDU, etc. That kind of fan investment is gold for an independent artist. Let's recap the magic. Human curation, broad musical range, risk-taking, community engagement, local scene support, and an open-minded audience. That's what sets college radio apart. From both commercial radio and algorithmic streaming, it's often unpredictable and rough around the edges. A student DJ might flub a cue or ramble passionately about a band, but that authenticity is the appeal. It's real. Now that we've sung its praises generally, how about some concrete success stories? which artists actually rode the college radio wave to independent success. Let's name names and drop some knowledge. From campus airwaves to independent success, artists who broke via college radio. All right, time for some stories. We've mentioned a few big names like REM and Coldplay that benefited from college radio love. But the focus of this show is independent musicians. Those who maybe didn't have a major label machine behind them at first, but built something sustainable thanks, in part, to college radio. Let's start with one of my personal heroes and a true indie icon, Annie DeFranco is often called the mother of the DIY movement. Back in 1990, at age 19, she said nah to the entire major label system and started her own label, Righteous Babe Records, to release her folk punk songs. This was radical at the time. A fiercely independent young woman, doing everything herself. How did she reach people without a label's promotion? By touring relentlessly and getting play on college and community radio. It's documented that early on she built her fan base through college station airplay and live performances. I remember in the mid-90s, any college station with a folk or alternative show had Annie's records on the shelf. Songs like Both Hands or 32 Flavors would show up on late-night broadcasts, resonating especially with college-aged listeners who connected to her honest, feminist, socially conscious lyrics. She wasn't on MTV, she wasn't on Top 40 radio, but she was a cult figure on campuses. By the end of the 90s, Annie was selling out theaters and had gold records, all without mainstream radio. To this day, she's cited as proof you can make it your own way, and she never had that one big pop hit. Her success was sustained directly by the people who discovered her through alternate channels like college radio and word of mouth. One blogger even noted how Annie rejected the typical path to success and instead built a following through college station airplay and live performances. That's exactly it. She cultivated a loyal, lifelong fan base that buys her albums and packs her concerts. Arguably far more valuable than the fleeting chart-topping single.
Annie is a killer example. She basically was the college radio star of the 90s singer-songwriter scene. I'd add folks like Liz Phair and PJ Harvey. They were on indie labels early on and heavily played at college stations, which gave them credibility and a fan base that later propelled their wider success. Or how about Fugazi, the post-hardcore band from DC? Fugazi refused to play the corporate game, famously kept their album prices cheap, tickets $5, all ages shows. Commercial rock radio wasn't touching Fugazi's 7-minute anti-establishment jams, but college radio ate it up. They became legends with zero mainstream airplay. That was all college circuits and word of mouth. It shows you don't need WUSL or Q102 if you have 100 small stations behind you and an army of college kids swapping your tapes.
For sure, we could list dozens. Think about Nirvana. Yes, they exploded once they got on MTV. But before that, college radio was spinning. Smells Like Teen Spirit. Legend has it, a college DJ at a station like KCMU in Seattle or somewhere, got an early copy of Nevermind and started the buzz before Geffen's. Radio department even had it on their radar. Or the Smashing Pumpkins. Their debut gish didn't chart high, but it was all over college rock stations, building momentum that led to Siamese Dream blowing up later and going beyond the 90s. The 2000s and 2010s have their college radio alumni too. Arcade Fire is a big one. Their first album, Funeral 2004, was a sensation on college and community stations, which helped turn them into indie darlings, long before the Grammys knew who they were. Death Cab for Cutie started on Barsic Records, getting lots of love from college DJs, which led to a cult following that eventually got them a major deal and mainstream exposure. Tahitians. Their quirky indie pop was heavily played on college stations, especially after that famous scene in Garden State. But even before that, the college crowd was onto them. These bands eventually crossed over to commercial alternative radio once they were already proven on the college circuit.
We should also mention some newer artists to bring it up to now. The college radio format has changed somewhat. Like CMJ, the college music journal that used to publish the definitive college airplay charts, went defunct around mid-2010s. But it's been replaced by the NACC, North American College and Community Charts, basically the new CMJ. If you look at recent NACC charts, you see a ton of independent artists topping them. Actually, one study of U.S. college radio airplay found that in 2020, about 40% of the top spins were independent alternative artists, the rest being big-name artists. Then by 2021, indie artists actually surpassed the big stars, making up 53% of total airplay on college stations. That's huge. It means college radio in 2021 was, on aggregate, playing more indie music than mainstream music, even though artists like The Weeknd or Billie Eilish still got spins. For example, in 2021, the band Glass Animals was number one on the college charts. Yep, right above Dua Lipa and Billie Eilish, and lots of independent acts like Japanese Breakfast, Girl in Red, Fleet Foxes, Dayglow were all in heavy rotation. That's an eclectic mix of alternative and indie pop rock artists, many of whom aren't getting played on your mainstream top 40 or even on many commercial alternative stations that tend to recycle the same hits. But college DJs were pumping them out, giving these artists exposure to the student demographic.
Let's underline that. Even today, college radio is breaking new indie artists. Japanese Breakfast, Michelle Zorna's project, and she's actually a Philly area native. Shout Out is a great case. By the time her album Jubilee dropped, she was all over WXPN and other college stations, and topped the NACC chart. That radio support helped her reach more listeners, and eventually land high-profile festival slots and TV appearances. Or take Soccer Mummy, an indie singer-songwriter who went from Bandcamp to being in rotation at college stations, building buzz that led to broader success. These artists might have decent streaming numbers too, but radio gave them a stamp of curation, like this is one of the best new albums. We're charting it. It's a form of validation within the music community. And historically, to be number one on the college radio charts was a big accolade for an indie artist. It still is, to those who know. It means hundreds of stations are playing your record. It's not some bots clicking play. It's hundreds of real DJs across the country, actively choosing your music. That often correlates with strong fan engagement. People hearing it and buying the record, or at least Shazamming it. An industry saying goes, college radio can represent a powerful platform for young bands, especially if they don't conform to commercial trends. It's exactly the platform for the weird, the groundbreaking, the niche-yetersome stuff.
Another artist we'd be remiss not to mention, Megadeth. Surprising? You think thrash metal in the 80s? You think maybe MTV's Headbangers Ball? But in their early days, it was college metal shows and some forward-thinking community stations, giving them spins when mainstream rock radio wouldn't touch extreme metal. Dave Mustaine, their frontman, has acknowledged college radio's role. Same for Metallica, actually. Before the Black Album era, Metallica was an underground band whose tracks got played by college DJs and late-night specialty shows. It built the metal subculture. punk, metal, hip-hop. All these subgenres have college radio to thank for incubating them. Think of early Public Enemy or De La Soul. Their innovative hip-hop got more early love on college stations and maybe some urban community stations than on major commercial stations initially, because they were pushing boundaries. Those college spins created buzz among young tastemakers, which eventually trickled up to larger outlets.
The pattern is clear across genres and decades. College radio has been a kingmaker for independent and alternative artists. It's the first domino in a chain that can lead to sustainable careers or even stardom. We often talk about DIY scenes. Well, college stations are often the media arm of those scenes. They amplify what's happening on the ground. To sum it up with an example, a certain artist could be too left of center for pop radio, but if their live album or indie release is beloved on college radio, they might still achieve big success. Arnie DeFranco is one example. By 1997, her live album, Living in Clip, went gold, 500,000 plus sales. And trust me, hardly any of that was because of mainstream radio. It was college stations and word of mouth fueling that. Or Coldplay's rapid rise in the early 2000s, partly influenced by early support from American college radios for Yellow. It all reinforces that college radio isn't just nostalgia, it's an ongoing launchpad. Okay, now say you're an independent artist listening to this and thinking, all right, I'm convinced. College radio sounds dope, but how the heck do I get my music on there? Great question. That's up next. We're going to get practical and give you a mini college radio submission 100. Getting your music on college radio, a how-to for indie artists. Time to switch to practical mode. If you're an independent artist, how can you actually tap into this college radio network we've been hyping? What steps do you take to get that DJ at WXPN or WKDU, or insert cool station here, to play your track? Let's break it down. First off, find the right stations and shows for your music. Not every college station will be a perfect fit for every style. Do a little homework. If you play, say, experimental electronic music, you might focus on stations known for electronic shows, like maybe WKDU, which has DJs spinning ambient and techno on certain days. If you're a singer-songwriter, a station like WXPN, with lots of folk acoustic programming, or any college station, with a folk Americana show, is a great target. Many college stations list their weekly show schedule. On their websites, look for shows by genre.
Right. Once you identify where you want to submit, look up the music director or program director. College stations typically have a student, or sometimes a staff member, in charge of handling new music, often titled Music Director, MD. Their job is literally to sift through submissions and decide what goes into rotation or gets passed to DJs. Most station websites or social media will have contact info, often an email like music@station.edu or similar. Now, here's where the accessibility of college radio is so sweet. You can actually reach these people directly and pretty easily, unlike major commercial stations where your email would get instantly trashed. Unless you have a big-time promoter, college MDs are generally open to hearing from independent artists. They might even be excited. They live to discover new music. One Music Tech article emphasized this, noting that college radios have a simple hierarchy, and you can easily reach out to the music directors and pitch your track directly to them, which is really hard to achieve on a major station. In short, shoot your shot.
When you do reach out, be professional and provide what they need. An email to a college music director should be short and sweet. Introduce yourself. Mention if you have any local connection or interesting story. Hey, I'm a Philly-based artist and longtime WXPN listener. Would love to share my new single with you. Describe your music briefly and accurately. Don't call yourself the next Radiohead unless you truly sound like Radiohead. And crucially, include easy access to your music. That means a link to stream, like a private SoundCloud or Bandcamp link, and or a download link. Many MDs appreciate MP3s or WAVs, so they can easily add to their system. If you just send a Spotify link, that might annoy them because they can't download from Spotify, and it's a pain to rip it. Make it smooth and accessible. It greatly increases your chances of getting added. Attach or link a one sheet, a simple PDF with info about you, a short bio, photo, contact info, any notable press or tour dates, and the track album info with song titles. This is basically your mini press kit. Some stations have an online submission form. If so, use it. Follow their guidelines if they have any posted. Some will say, we prefer digital submissions via email, or conversely, we only accept physical CDs. Yes, some still love CDs.
Speaking of physical, it might seem old school, but mailing a CD or vinyl and a press kit to a station can still be effective. Many college stations still have a physical music library, and some MDs get a kick out of receiving a nicely packaged album with a handwritten note. At the very least, physical mail stands out. A padded envelope in a mailbox has a tactile presence that one out of 500 emails doesn't. If you go this route, include a cover letter, again, brief and friendly. Your CD, properly tagged with artist track info, maybe a sticker or download card, and any one sheet. Make sure to address it to the music director by name if possible. Also, pro tip, consider including a station ID script or even a recorded station ID. What's that? It's those little, you're listening to 90.x FM and this is your name. Station IDs are required legal IDs or just fun bumpers. And DJs love when an artist provides one. If you're emailing, you can mention, I'd be happy to record a station ID if you'd like. As a Hypebot article noted, it's great to keep them short. Hi, it's Artist, and you're listening to Station. This shows you're engaged and not just mass spamming. You care about their station.
Another thing, follow up, but don't be a pest. College MDs are often students, juggling classes or volunteers doing it for the love. They can be overwhelmed with submissions. Bigger stations get hundreds a week. It's okay to send a polite follow-up email, or even make a phone call if you provided a CD and want to check it arrived. In fact, one college radio promoter said phone calls are essential for staying on a music director's radar. That personal touch can prompt them to actually pull your CD out of the pile and give it a listen. If calling, be super courteous of their time. Ask if it's a good time to talk. Be brief. Hi, I'm so-and-so. I sent an album titled X last week. Wanted to see if you got it and if you had a chance to listen. I really think it might fit your name of a show or general format. Worst case, they say they haven't listened yet. Best case, you get some feedback, or they say, oh yeah, we added track 3 to our library. Good stuff.
Let me emphasize politeness and personalization. Don't do a giant BCC email to 100 stations with Dear DJ. That's the quickest way to the trash. Take a bit of time to individualize. Use the station's name, mention a show or DJ if you actually listened. Even if you didn't, a little research helps. For example, I see you have a show for new indie rock on Wednesdays. My music might be a great fit there. This signals that you're not just blasting every frequency. You chose them. And whatever you do, don't be entitled. Like, don't say, my track is a guaranteed hit for your station, or some hype. These MDs and DJs have seen it all. Just be honest and respectful. I'd be honored if you gave it a listen. Thanks for supporting independent artists. That goes a long way.
Now, a quick word about NACC and Spinatron, which were mentioned. These are more on the tracking and promotion side. The NACC North American College and Community Chart is the weekly chart of top albums being played on college stations. If you're doing a college radio campaign, either DIY or via a promoter, you might send your album to many stations at once and then see if you can chart. NACC offers subscriptions where you can see detailed reports of who's playing what. As an indie artist, you might not pay for that. It's a bit pricey for individuals. Memberships can cost around $100, $150 a month for NACC or Spinatron, but you can still access some charts on the NACC website or their social media. Charting on NACC Top 200. The main chart is a sign you're getting broad airplay.
Spinatron is another tool. It's a service many non-commercial stations use to log their playlists. If a station subscribes, every time a DJ plays a song, they enter it into Spinatron, and it creates a public playlist. As an artist, you can actually search Spinatron's public site for your band name and see if any station logged it. That's a way to keep track of where you're getting spins, even if you didn't directly hear from the station. Again, some of its features are behind a paywall for advanced tracking, but basic searching is free. The Hypebot piece mentioned Spinatron is helpful to track individual spins, where and when you've gotten radio play.
Let's not forget another old-fashioned but effective tactic. Hire a college radio promotion service or intern. Now, this costs money. There are indie promoters who specialize in sending your record to hundreds of stations and doing the follow-up calls for you. If you have a budget and not much time, it can help, as they have relationships with MDs. But many truly DIY artists skip this to save cash and do a smaller targeted push on their own, which can work if you hustle and have a compelling album. There's no one right way. Just know it's an option. One more key point. College radio is regional too. Start with your local or regional stations. If you're in Philadelphia, like us, definitely get your stuff too. WXPN, WKDU, WHIP, WRTI if relevant. And maybe nearby stations like Princeton's, WPRB, or Rutgers, WRSU, etc. If you gig in those areas, radio play there can directly translate to people showing up, then expand outward to other regions.
And when you do get played, leverage it. Send a quick thank you to the DJ or MD. Maybe you notice on Twitter a station posted their weekly ads and you're on it. Give it a retweet and shout out. Thanks, station, for spinning my new track. This not only builds goodwill, station folks appreciate the love, but it also signals to your fans that you've got radio support, which builds your credibility. Some advice I read suggests even sending a physical thank you note or some band stickers, merch to the station, if they really support you. It sounds a bit extra, but remember, these DJs are volunteers. A little appreciation goes a long way and might keep them in your corner for the long run. Also, follow the station and specific DJs on social media. Engage genuinely. College DJs are often music superfans. Some of them might remain your fans for decades. I know people who first heard an artist on their college show and 20 years later still champion that artist. That kind of lifelong fan often starts behind a college radio mic.
Excellent points. So to bullet point, the practical steps for our listeners. 1. Research station shows that fit your genre. Start local, then national. 2. Find contact info, music director email, submission guidelines. 3. Prepare your submission. Professional email, short bio, similar artists' genre, links to music, attach one sheet, or EPK, offer download, follow any specified format. 4. Send physical copies if appropriate, especially to key stations, with a note and maybe fun extras. Stickers, thank you. Station ID 5. Follow up politely via email or phone after a week or two to confirm receipt and encourage a listen. 6. Use tools. Check Spinatron or station websites for playlist mentions of your songs. 7. Thank and engage. When you get airplay, shout it out on social. Send gratitude to DJs. Build that relationship. 8. Repeat. College radio promotion can be an ongoing effort with each release. Over time, you might chart on NACC or get invited for live in-studio sessions. Many stations love hosting bands for live sets. WKDU's done that. WXPN has studio sessions, etc. It might sound like a lot of legwork compared to just uploading to DistroKid United Masters, SoundCloud and others, and praying for streams. But trust me, the personal touch here can yield fans and connections that are far more rewarding than a random algorithmic stream.
And don't be discouraged by rejection or silence. Not every station will reply or play your stuff. That's okay. Even a handful of ads, meaning your record added to their library rotation, can be awesome. Sometimes one enthusiastic DJ at one station ends up playing you every week and talking about you. That can create a ripple effect.
Exactly, it's about genuine connection. In a world of digital noise now, we've got the how. Let's talk about the money. I know a lot of artists are like, this sounds nice spiritually, but can it pay any bills? We're gonna tackle the monetary side. College radio spins versus streaming payouts, and where sync licensing fits in. Let's get real with the numbers and strategy. Show me the money. College radio versus streaming versus sync licensing. Alright, let's put on our accounting hats for a second and talk about money. Because yes, while making art isn't all about the Benjamins, we do gotta eat and pay rent. So how does college radio factor in financially, compared to the other ways of distributing music, like streaming or licensing your music for TV, film sync? LL start with the obvious. You're not gonna get rich from college radio airplay alone. College and non-commercial stations are generally smaller, and the way royalties work for radio in the US is a bit quirky. When your song is played on AM/FM radio, commercial or college, doesn't matter. Songwriters earn performance royalties via their PROs, performance rights organizations like BMI, ASCAP. However, and this often shocks people, in the US, the performers and labels don't earn from terrestrial radio due to an old legal loophole. So if you wrote and performed your own song, you'd at least get the songwriter cut. If you're in a band and you wrote the song together, you split that. Now, how much are we talking? For college stations, which pay lower license fees than big commercial stations, it's pretty modest. In fact, BMI, one of the PROs, has a stated minimum rate for college radio plays, about 6 cents per song, total F, for all writers, publishers. Yup, 6 pennies. Not per listener, just per play. So, if you wrote the song entirely, that whole 6 cents goes to you, minus whatever small admin cut. If you have a co-writer or publisher, it's split. Either way, we're talking pocket change. I've literally received a royalty statement showing something like KEXP3 spins 18 cents.
Meanwhile, let's compare that to streaming. We all know streaming payouts are notoriously low, but here's a refresher. Spotify pays roughly 0.003 to 0.005 per stream on average. Apple Music is a bit higher, maybe around $0.01 per stream on a good day. but let's stick with Spotify since it's the largest. So one stream might earn you around a third of a penny. To earn the same 6 cents that one college radio spin generated in songwriter royalties, you'd need about 12 to 20 streams, depending on the exact rate. Not a huge difference at that micro scale, pennies either way. But here's the kicker. A single college radio spin might reach hundreds or even thousands of ears at once if you consider a station's listening audience. You're getting exposure that one stream is one person. There's no direct payout per listener on radio, but the impact per play can be higher in terms of people hearing your music. On Spotify, to get 1,000 people to hear your song, you need 1,000 streams, which might net you about $3 to $5. If a college station with 1,000 listeners plays your song once, you got to those same 1,000 people. You personally only get 6 cents in royalties from it. But if even a fraction of those listeners become fans, that could lead to way more than $3 in value through them buying your merch, going to your show, or streaming you more later.
Exactly. It's not really apples to apples. To compare the immediate money, college radio is more of a marketing promotion angle. It builds your brand and fan base, which can indirectly lead to more sales and streams. Streaming, on the other hand, can generate small income directly, but often without building that connection. Now, for an independent artist's reality check, streaming requires massive volume. To make substantial money, one source says at $0.003 per stream, you'd need about 1 million streams to gross $3,000. And that's before distributing it via your aggregator, or label cut, if you have one. How many indie artists get millions of streams regularly? Not too many, especially if you're just starting, or in a niche genre. So, in a month where, say, a few college stations put your song in rotation and play it 10 times each, you might collect, I don't know, a couple of bucks in royalties from that. Meanwhile, maybe you got 5,000 Spotify streams, which might be $15. Neither is paying the bills by itself, but think bigger picture. Those radio spins possibly garnered you some dedicated fans. Those 5,000 streams, were they people who truly engaged? Or passive listens on a background playlist? The Hypebot Reverb Nation author, Cassidy Frost, put it well. It's more beneficial for a band to have a couple hundred real, dedicated fans who buy t-shirts and tickets, than millions of passive streams from listeners who might not even notice the name of the artist. College radio tends to cultivate the former, real fans, whereas streaming can often result in the latter, drive by listens. And guess what? The most valuable new fans you can get are often the DJs themselves. That's a direct quote from a college radio promoter. If a DJ loves your music, they will hype you to their audience consistently, and maybe even for years, essentially becoming a champion for you. That relationship is priceless.
Preach. As an artist, I take 100 people who truly love my music and will support me long term, over 100,000 one-time streamers any day. One college DJ fan could lead you to a gig in their town, an interview on their station, or connecting you with other music folks. That's intangible value you can't buy with a Spotify play. Now, let's talk about sync licensing, because that was mentioned as a long-term strategy that can blow both streaming and radio out of the water financially. Sync licensing means placing your music in visual media, like TV shows, movies, commercials, video games, etc. The money here can be significantly bigger per usage. We're talking upfront fees plus potential royalties from broadcasts. To illustrate, you get your song on, say, a Netflix show, maybe a brief background use. An indie artist could earn anywhere from a few hundred to several thousand dollars for that placement, depending on the show's budget and length of use. If it's a big national TV commercial, it could even be tens of thousands. There are reports of unknown artists getting, for example, £40,000, around $50,000, for a major ad sync. Those are rare windfalls, but they happen. More commonly, I know indie artists who've gotten $1,000 to $5,000 for a song in a popular cable TV series. That alone might dwarf what that artist made from an entire year of streaming.
There's also the royalty side of sync. If your song is on network TV or a film that airs on TV, you get performance royalties from that too. For instance, someone told me a single play of a song on a primetime network show can net the writer a few $100 in royalties on top of any sync fee, because PROs pay higher for TV performances than radio. And if that episode re-airs or streams globally, you keep getting paid back-end royalties. It's like a gift that can keep giving for years. If the show goes into syndication, we came across a stat. The RIAA reported sync revenues were $178 million in just the first half of 2022 in the US, up nearly 30% year over year. That's a growing pie, and indie artists are getting slices of it. As music supervisors seek cool new music, that's cheaper than licensing, say, a Beatles song. A famous recent example, Kate Bush's 1985 song Running Up That Hill, was used in Stranger Things and it exploded. Now Kate Bush is not an indie unknown, but it shows sync can rocket a song's popularity. It hit chart highs 37 years after release. For a more indie example, Orville Peck had a song featured in HBO's Euphoria, and apparently that led to an 812% increase in streams for that song. That's insane. Sync not only gave him a nice check, but also massively boosted his listener base.
So sync is kind of the holy grail of passive income for musicians. Once you land some good syncs, you could literally be sleeping while checks roll in for something you recorded long ago. I read a piece by Aaron Davison, sync guru, who said, sync licensing is one of the only ways to earn long-term, recurring income from music you've already made. One song can generate income through placements for years after. Like he had a song from 10 years ago, still bringing in royalties from a TV placement that keeps airing. Try getting that from one radio spin or a few thousand streams. No chance. Now, realistically, getting sync placements is competitive. It helps if your music fits certain moods, or has universal lyrics, or instrumental versions. But as a strategy, many indie artists are focusing more on pitching for sync than worrying about a few extra Spotify playlist ads, because one good sync can be worth hundreds of thousands of streams financially.
So where does that leave college radio? It might sound like, okay, financially radio pays pennies and sync pays big bucks, so maybe focus on sync. But it's not either or, they complement each other. College radio builds your story and fan base, which can actually make you more attractive. For sync to music supervisors, notice when an artist is buzzed about or has a strong following. Also, college radio itself can indirectly yield money by boosting your streams and sales. Listeners hear you on the radio, then go stream your album, or buy it on Apple Music or Bandcamp, or see you on tour. There's a promotional feedback loop. One more monetary angle, live gigs and merch. Getting spins in a city can help you draw a crowd there. For example, if WXPN hypes you and plays you often, when you come play in Philly, you might sell more tickets, and thus more money from the show. The value of that radio exposure comes out in your concert revenue. And if you do a live on-air performance or interview on a station, you can often plug your merch or upcoming album, driving direct sales. Those things don't show up as neatly quantifiable as a streaming statement, but they are real.
Let's also compare the investment aspect. people sometimes pay for playlist promotion, which is risky and often scammy, or for ads to boost streams. Instead, maybe you spend some money on a small college radio campaign, postage for CDs, hiring a college radio promoter, etc. The ROI in terms of engaged audience might be better. Hard to measure, but my gut says a kid who hears you on their beloved radio show is more likely to become a lifelong supporter than a random skip-happy streamer. So yeah, streaming is necessary and great. It's global reach and convenience, but it generates micropennies and often passive listening. College radio generates micropennies too per play, but tends to yield active listeners who might invest in you more. And sync, that's the jackpot for some steady income if you can build a catalog and relationships to get placements. In fact, some argue sync is the best long-term income strategy for indie musicians now, because once you land a few, you can keep getting paid without constant hustle.
And that leads to a bigger thought. As an independent artist in 2025, you need a diverse strategy. Streaming, radio, sync, live shows, merch, crowdfunding, it all adds up. College radio is one piece of that puzzle that many overlook because it's old school. But hopefully, we're showing it can still punch above its weight. It's not going to cut you a big check directly, but it can open doors that lead to revenue. Before we wrap money talk, let me throw a quick hypothetical. Suppose your song gets, say, 50 spins on various college stations in a quarter. That's 50 plays asterisk 6 cents equals $3 in songwriter royalties. Hey, one latte. Those 50 plays might have reached thousands of ears cumulatively. Even if 100 people became fans, and each of those 100 streams your song 20 times, that's 2,000 streams, that's another, say, tilde, $8. Plus maybe 5 of them buy your $20 t-shirt, equals $100. And maybe you gained a solid fan base in one city that draws 30 extra people to your $10 show, equals $300. Now, we're talking a couple hundred bucks outcome from exposure that directly paid $3. The indirect is where it's at.
Nicely broken down. And if one of those fans happens to be a filmmaker who heard you on their college radio, boom, maybe you get that sync placement next. The universe works in mysterious ways. All right, we've geeked out on numbers and strategy. Let's zoom out again and hit some history and big picture commentary. Specifically, how radio and how we use it has changed over the years, from being the avenue for music discovery to now being somewhat overshadowed by talk and podcasts, and what that means for an artist.
From radio stars to podcast planet, the changing landscape and why college radio still matters. Time for a little history lesson and cultural commentary. My friends, let's rewind a few decades. Before streaming, before MP3s south, heck, before CDs and cassettes, there was radio. For much of the 20th century, getting your song on the radio was the absolute pinnacle of exposure. If you were an artist and your song was added to rotation on a major commercial station in, say, 1985, it could mean millions of people hearing it. That usually translated to record sales, chart positions, maybe a career made overnight. Of course, it was incredibly difficult to achieve. The major labels had it on lock. There was payola scandals, gatekeepers galore. If you were independent in those days, good luck getting past the fortress of corporate program directors. So what did indie and alternative artists do? They turned to college radio and other non-commercial stations. In the late 70s and 80s, college radio basically invented what came to be known as alternative music. It was literally called college rock. Early on, because REM, The Smiths, The Cure, all that was largely heard on college stations, and a few adventurous commercial stations only, By the late 80s, college radio was such a force that industry folks watched the CMJ College Music Journal charts to see what was bubbling under. If an indie band was number one on the CMJ Top 200, that meant they had a real fan base among the tastemakers. Often that preceded the band getting scooped up by a major. Nirvana is a prime example. Bleach, their first record on Sub Pop, was a hit on college radio and in the underground. That buzz helped get them signed to Geffen for Nevermind. There's a reason the early 90s explosion of alternative, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, etc., is sometimes credited as the day college rock graduated into the mainstream. The groundwork was laid by years of college radio support.
Yeah, and think about how bands like U2 in their early days, or Depeche Mode, they weren't on pop radio initially. College and indie stations in the U.S. championed them until they got big enough. Or the whole American hardcore punk scene, Black Flag, Husker Du, Minutemen. None of that would have been heard by wider audiences if not for college radio trading tapes and playing those records. So, historically, if you were non-mainstream, college radio was the avenue to find your tribe of listeners. Now, fast forward to the 21st century. The internet upended everything. Suddenly, any artist can self-distribute globally. Hello, MySpace, YouTube, Spotify, etc. You don't need a station's transmitter to reach the masses. Does that make radio irrelevant? Some might prematurely say yes, but hold on. One big shift. Radio listening overall has seen some decline, especially among younger folks, in favor of streaming and podcasts. Music on commercial radio started taking a back seat in the 2000s as stations consolidated thanks to deregulation and leaned heavy on proven hits or switched formats to talk sports. Many cities saw formerly music-centric stations go all talk or news. For example, here in Philly, we had HYY 90.9 FM switch from music to talk news in the 90s, which ironically pushed some music programs over to WXPN. Nationwide, a lot of folks under 30 today are more likely to plug in a Spotify playlist or a podcast during drive time than tune into FM for new jams.
There are stats backing this up. The share of audio listening that's spoken word content, like talk radio, podcasts, audiobooks, has been rising steadily over the past decade or so. Younger audiences in particular have flocked to podcasts. Edison Research reported a 116% increase in spoken word audio consumption among 13 to 24 year olds over 7 years, and those young spoken word listeners spend twice as much time with podcasts as they do with AM/FM radio. So yeah, if you're a talk radio station, you might be sweating a bit seeing those trends. As one media blogger said, it should frighten every talk radio station how much youth are pivoting away to podcasts. For music radio, the picture is mixed. People do still listen to music on the radio, especially older demographics and in cars. But the total time people spend with broadcast radio has gradually dropped. In 2019, about 89% of Americans 12 and older listened to radio weekly. By 2020, it was 83%. Pandemic effect too. Public music stations, like many college stations, also saw some audience decline. In recent years, as digital alternatives proliferate, simply put, radio isn't the monopoly of ears it once was.
So what does this cultural shift mean for artists who want their music heard? On one hand, it's a challenge. You can't just expect that if you get on the radio, everyone's gonna hear it like in 1985. Many people might miss it entirely because they aren't tuned in. On the other hand, those who do still listen to music radio are likely the hardcore music fans, the ones who intentionally seek out new tunes and shows. It's a self-selecting audience now. That can actually be a good thing. You're reaching the influencers, the crate diggers, the ones who will shout from rooftops or Reddit threads about a cool new band they heard. Also, interestingly, while mainstream commercial radio might be shrinking or stagnating, college radio has managed to adapt and survive. Stations now also stream online. Some have archived shows or even podcasts of their content. They often maintain active social media or even do video sessions. So they're mixing old school broadcasting with new tech to stay accessible. And consider, with so much music and podcast content out there, sometimes listeners crave curation. We've talked about this, the human touch. That's something podcasts provide for talk and storytelling, and college radio provides for music. If anything, in a sea of endless choices on Spotify, a lot of people, myself included, occasionally feel decision fatigue. Like, just give me a cool DJ who will play something awesome so I don't have to hunt for it. College radio answers that call.
Also, podcasts might be replacing talk radio content, but they're not replacing the experience of a live DJ spinning music in the moment. There are some podcasts that feature music or DJ mixes, but licensing makes it tricky for them to play full songs legally. So radio is still one of the only ways to hear a variety of full songs, curated in real time by a host legally. It's like a live concert versus an algorithmic jukebox. For artists, this means if your goal is to just have my music heard by people in a meaningful way, college radio is actually one of the purest avenues left. No subscription needed, often free to air or stream. And the listener has intentionally tuned in for discovery. Compare that to blasting your song into the void of Spotify, where it may or may not get surfaced.
Another big thing, community and cultural context. A local radio show can give context to your music, like discussing the scene you're from or the message in your song. That enriches how listeners receive it. In contrast, if your track comes up between two random songs on a huge playlist, it's just track 7 by some artist. The context is lost. A college DJ might say, "Here's a brand new track from the Lunar Tides. They're an indie trio out of Philly who recorded this in a dorm room. Check it out." That 10-second intro suddenly frames the song as a cool discovery story. And after playing it, maybe the DJ says, "Whoa, that was the Lunar Tides. I'm really digging their vibe. Kind of reminds me of early Beach House meets Lo-Fi Garage. Their EP drops next month, and they'll be playing at Kung Fu Necktie on the 15th. Definitely catch them live if you can." Bam. In 2 sentences, the DJ promoted your release and your show and validated you by comparing to known names. That's gold that streaming can't replicate.
We should also acknowledge many college radio stations themselves have pivoted some content to talk or podcasts in certain day parts, because they know students have varied interests, news hours, sports talk, etc. But they usually keep a solid amount of music programming. It's their identity. The overall radio industry might be more talk-driven now, but college stations are among the last bastions where music-driven programming is a priority. They're often run by music obsessives, so they're not gonna ditch the tunes for a shock jock morning zoo or endless political rants. It's also worth noting that some college stations are doing podcasts but about music, like interviews with bands, history of genres, etc. They are evolving with the times, but the core remains getting music out there.
Let's get philosophical for a sec. The show's big theme is, why make music? Today specifically, why bother with something like radio? I'd say, make music to connect with people in the real world, not just to accumulate streams. Radio is a conduit for that real-world connection. Even as culture shifts, humans still crave shared experiences. Tuning into a radio show is a shared experience. Did you hear that set last night on WKDU? It was fire. That's a conversation two friends can have. Nobody really says, "Did you hear that Discover Weekly playlist?" with the same excitement. There's a cultural glue that radio provides. It has DJs serving as quasi-local celebrities or voices of the community. Like Philly folks know names like Robert Drake on WXPN or Sid Mark, who did Sinatra shows on the radio for decades. That stuff resonates. In college radio, sometimes the DJs themselves become beloved figures on campus or in town, even if it's just that quirky midnight DJ who plays industrial noise and gives shout-outs to dorm parties. For an artist, being part of that tradition, getting spun by a DJ like that, it places you in a lineage and community. It's cooler than being on an algorithmic playlist that no one curates by hand, in my humble opinion.
And culturally, as radio has fragmented, college radio stands out as counterculture. When most commercial stations are playing the same 10 hits or syndicated talk, tuning the dial and finding a ragtag college station feels almost subversive. It's punk rock to embrace radio in 2025. If radio is supposed to be dying, maybe I'm romanticizing, but I truly believe college radio still holds weight for independent discovery, precisely because it's not the mainstream path. The mainstream nowadays is trying to gain the streaming numbers or TikTok virality. Those can be fickle. But the college radio path is about slow build, authenticity, grassroots support. That might not catapult you to fame overnight, but it can sustain you for a long time. Many of the artists we talked about, Ani Fugazi, dare I say, Think Tim had long careers, or will have long careers, without ever topping Billboard charts, because they had true fans and respectable sales drawn from alternative exposure.
One last angle. Radio's cultural shift also means less competition in that space. If fewer new artists are targeting radio, because they're all about playlists and social media, that leaves an opportunity for those who do. The college radio inbox might not be quite as flooded as it was in, say, 2008, when every indie band mailed out 300 CDs hoping to chart on CMJ. These days, some artists skip it entirely, which is a shame for them, but could be a boon for you. There's a real chance that students will get to meet, and hear, a new artist who isn't being pitched by 50 other PR teams. The Connect 2 article I saw put it like, college radio is as important as ever for up-and-coming artists, because at college there's a chance for genuine interaction and for students to latch on to their emerging band. It's almost an adopt-a-band environment. We discovered this act on our station that fosters loyalty.
Beautifully said. So even as we live in a podcast planet and Spotify world, college radio continues to truck along as a vibrant subculture. It might not have the sheer numbers it once did in the pre-internet era, but its impact per listener is arguably greater now. It's an antidote to passive listening. It's active, community-oriented, and culture-driving. All right, we've covered a ton of ground. The special source of college radio, artist success stories from it, how to actually get on it, the money or lack thereof, and the intangible benefits, and the shifting media landscape. Before we wrap up and hand the mic fully to Think Tim for his closing rant, let's summarize a bit and hit some calls to action, because we want you not just to hear this info, but to act on it and also to keep in touch with us. Key takeaways. College radio is alive and kicking, with human-curated, adventurous programming that benefits independent musicians immensely. Artists from Arnie DeFranco to Japanese Breakfast have seen college radio launch or bolster their careers. If you're an indie artist, you should absolutely consider reaching out to college stations. Email those music directors. Send that vinyl. Follow up nicely. It could score. You've dedicated fans and even some industry attention. Don't expect big royalty checks from spins, but do expect an engaged audience that streaming alone might not give you. And while you chase those Spotify playlists and TikTok trends, because hey, it's all part of the puzzle, remember the old school paths, like radio, and new school paths, like sync. A balanced strategy is key. And for listeners, support your local college and community stations. Listen, donate if you can, attend their events. They are the breeding ground for tomorrow's great artists, and an irreplaceable part of the music ecosystem. As Chris Martin said, they're the future for broadcasting stars and pioneers of tomorrow. That future only happens if we keep tuning in.
Yo, warm cookies. I think it's about time I climb on this soapbox you built and do what I do best. Rant it out. You ready for a Think Tim thought of the moment?
I was born ready. All right, folks, strap in. Here comes Think Tim, THINKTIMM, with the closing sermon. And quick reminder, after this, be sure to follow us on all platforms. Subscribe to Why Make Music, .. wherever you get your podcasts. Share it with your friends. And check out thinktim.com for more content, updates, and ways to get involved. We're on every social media that matters, and maybe some that don't. Look up DJ Warm Cookies and Think Tim. Give us that follow, smash that like, all that good stuff. We love hearing from you. If you have a story about college radio or a question, hit us up on thinktim.com or our Instagram or Blue Sky. We might just shout you out in a future episode. All right, Think Tim, the floor is yours. Bring us home, brother. THINKTIMM. If nothing else.
Okay, listen up, people, especially you artists out there, and you music lovers too. I'm about to get real with you. We've spent the last hour hyping college radio like it's 1995. You might be thinking, man, these guys are nostalgia junkies. The future's all AI-driven playlists and viral TikTok dances. Who needs a dingy FM station? Well, here's my challenge to that mindset. Have you ever truly felt moved by an algorithm? Has a Spotify recommendation ever given you goosebumps of belonging? Did Apple Music ever make you feel like you were part of a culture, a scene, a moment? I'm guessing not really. It might give you convenience. It might give you dopamine hits of another song, cool. But it will not give you soul. You know what gave me soul? A crackling college radio broadcast at 1 a.m. when I was 20. Lonely, flipping through the dial in my crappy apartment, and suddenly hearing a DJ, a person, say, I don't know who needs to hear this tonight, but this song got me through a tough time. And then he played a track by a local band I'd never heard of that punched me in the heart. That moment changed me. I became a fan of that band, went to their shows, met folks there. That experience, that's humanity. That's art connecting people. Now imagine you're an artist. What do you want? Do you want a million mindless streams? Or do you want connection? Do you want your song to be background noise on a chill vibes playlist while someone does their homework? Or do you want it to come on the radio and someone turns the volume up, stops what they're doing, and listens? I'd pick the latter. Every single time. We live in a world where music is abundant, but attention is scarce. Everyone's chasing the algorithm dragon. Please, almighty Spotify, put me on a curated playlist so I don't fade into oblivion. It's a sucker's game if that's all you do. Because even when you get on that playlist, you're one of 50 songs shuffled that hour. Who remembers you? Maybe a few. It's passive. But you get on a college radio show, the DJ might talk about you, the station might tweet about you, a listener might jot your name down. It's active. It's memorable. It's part of a narrative. Now, I'm not naive. I know you need those streams too. I know you need TikTok videos. I know you gotta hustle on all fronts, but don't you dare overlook the power of real human evangelism. College radio DJs are evangelists for music. They are the preachers in the church of rock, hip-hop, jazz, whatever. They convert listeners into believers of you. And they do it not because you paid them, not because you gamed a system, but because they genuinely liked your art. That's the purest endorsement you can ever get. We've seen this cultural shift. Big radio turned mostly into talk radio or repetitive corporate playlists, and podcasts came in for talk, and playlists came in for music. But there's this middle ground, this sweet spot, where real people curate music and talk with you, not at you, building a community. That's college radio and its kin, community stations, web radios with a human touch. They're like little campfires in the digital night. You can ignore them and wander in the dark, or you can gather round and warm your hands, maybe make a friend, maybe hear a story or a song that changes your life. For artists, don't just chase the global, faceless masses. Nurture the real ones. The 50 people who heard you on a college station and felt a spark are worth more than 5,000 who streamed you once and forgot. Those 50 will remember. They'll follow you, tell friends, maybe become your street team, your Patreon patrons, whatever. That's how you build a career, not a one-hit blip. Here's a little rant within the rant. Support the damn stations that support you. If you get played, send that thank you. If you can afford it and you love what they do, donate a few bucks or at least spread the word about them. We can't lose these cultural institutions. Some college stations struggle with funding or administrative pressures. We, the music community, should lift them up. Because when they thrive, we thrive. They'll be there to play the bands that don't fit anywhere else, to give students a voice, to broadcast local news and weird art and everything in between. And listeners, especially younger listeners who maybe never tuned in before, I encourage you, go find your local college station stream or FM frequency. Give it a try for a few hours. You might be surprised at how refreshing it is. No, it's not tailored to only what you already like, and that's the point. You might discover a whole genre or scene you didn't know existed in your backyard. To wrap this up, the world doesn't need more homogenization. It needs human flavor. College radio is human flavor. It's student flavor, local flavor, your flavor. Independent musicians, that's a space where you can truly be heard and appreciated for what you do, not just your metrics. It's a place where music is not a content commodity. It's a lifeline, a passion. So why make music if you're just going to feed it to an algorithmic void? Make music to reach hearts and eardrums in the real world. Make music because a college DJ in some town might fall in love with it and spin it for their campus, starting a chain reaction of fandom that no algorithm could ever manufacture authentically. I'm Think Tim, if nothing else. THINKTIMM. Why make music dot dot dot?
There it is. The gospel according to Think Tim. Feeling fired up, folks? I know I am. So that's our show for today. A comprehensive look at college radio's power and why it still matters for all you independent artists and music fans out there. If you've stuck with us this long, you're the real MVP. Thank you. Remember to subscribe to Why Make Music so you never miss an episode where we get deep into the realness of making music. In this crazy industry, follow us on social media. We'll post show notes, maybe some behind the scenes, and definitely visit thinktim.com for more from my man here. He's got blogs, links to his projects, and more. Show him some love. If you learned something today or got inspired, do us a favor. Share this episode with a friend who might need to hear it. Maybe a fellow musician who's frustrated with streaming, or a music lover who dig the college radio vibe. Spread the knowledge. Finally, huge thanks to the college stations and DJs out there doing the work. We see you. We appreciate you. To WXPN, WKDU, WHIP, WRTI, and all our Philly stations, and all across the country, keep on spinning that good stuff and breaking those new artists. This is DJ Warm Cookies, aka Willa May and Think Tim, signing off for episode 036 of Why Make Music. Keep creating, keep listening, and keep it real. Catch you next time, same place. And until then, support your scene and stay musical. Peace and be wild.